Before we start, perhaps I just say a few words about lying meditation. Whenever I, if I meet people who are like chronically ill and have a lot of pain, many of them have developed lying meditation. People sometimes chuckle, lying meditation, just go to sleep. But actually it's obviously one of the postures that we live in. And if you can develop lying meditation, it's very valuable because your body can be very, very relaxed, but it's hard to do because it's so relaxed, so you tend to fall asleep. What I found in trying to develop that is that it's like with the sitting posture, you've got the vitality of the spine that you can play around with. So as I was saying, during that meditation, I was suggesting the deep breathing and the kind of expansion of the spine. You can play around a lot with your energy with the sitting posture. And something about sitting posture, even on a chair, it's different, but I just find cross-legged, like I used to be able to sit lotus, but my knees are a bit kaput now. Just that, like full lotus was very solid and your spine is very strong and you can get a lot of vitality from that, and it's just the way, which is quite skillful. But the problem then with lying meditation is how can you get the vitality? How can you get that kind of vitality? So one thing, if you're really, really tired, then just use a lying posture to fall asleep. But if you've got a lot of energy and your body is hurting, and it's obviously worthwhile trying to develop that. And I think the main thing that I found was that in the lying posture, well, first of all, how to, what posture to take. Well, when I tried the classical, when you see the Buddha lying on the side, on the right side, I just found my whole shoulder fell asleep. So I didn't find that actually worked that well. So I found corpse posture, just laying on my back, and I found just putting my hands on my thighs like that was the best. And sometimes I would put a towel in the small of my back to try to get the hara open, and sometimes I put a little towel just inside my knees just to get some curve on the knees. So that you play around with, right? But then the main thing I found was that the lying posture for me was associated with sleep. And sleep was associated with comfort. So as soon as I take the posture, and as soon as I felt discomfort, I saw that my mind wanted to go and cuddle, kind of get into a semi-fetal kind of posture and just get all comfortable. And that's what I had to be aware of. So I found that if I'm aware of discomfort, just the first discomfort that arises, and not move. So that seemed to me to be the most skillful thing, is not moving. Just as in sitting posture, if you want to calm the mind, you just can't fidget. You got to find a posture where you can be, to some extent, still. So the same with a lying posture. So what works for me is, first of all, that I have enough vitality to do the lying posture. If I don't, then I either I sleep, or I do walking or sit. But if I have enough vitality, then I lay down and I make a real clear determination that this is meditation, not sleep. I mean, it sounds obvious, but that's the nature of meditation, is you're trying to really make these clear intentions in your mind. This is what I'm doing, meditating now. Clarity of direction, because what happens is that the habits of consciousness usually overtake your intentions. Even though you intend to do things well, you don't do them because of habits. So you make a clear intention. What am I doing? And I'm meditating. And then with the posture, I found, get a posture, get it comfortable, settle it in, and then don't move. Just make that determination, don't move. And so what I found is then the desire to move, to become comfortable, And now, so going back, that the discomfort is obviously not going to hurt you. That's the beauty of it. The discomfort is just the, you know, being, it's the way the body is. So discomfort, obviously, there's no problem with it. So then, using that very discomfort as the object of attention, and using the desire to move, and knowing the desire to move and not moving. So this is not like, I'm not going to move, you know, I'm not going, that's just willpower. There's no wisdom in willpower. So you can do that for a while, not move, but there's no wisdom. You have to do it with wisdom. So then I can, don't move. And so then the desire to move comes, and you watch that, right? And you become more mindful. And this is one of the principles in I think, contemplative practice, is that every mood, every emotion, every thought should be a way that you deepen awareness, rather than some things being better and some things not being better. And you can see how, like, difficult states of mind, like I was talking about fear last night, if I can be aware of fear and hold that fear and be aware of it, my mindfulness becomes really strong, as opposed to somehow, you know, just having nice states of mind. So the same with the lying posture. So then, from there, if I started to kind of drift off, I would just push my stomach up. I use the small of my back a lot for energy, and my chest. I use the spine a lot. Anyway, if you'd like, you can try that. You know, experiment with that. So there was one monk here who had a lot of chronic illnesses. In fact, he had to disrobe because his illnesses were so strong. And I was just talking to him the other day, and he said that was his main posture, because, you know, he was so physically weak, really, really quite weak, that was the only posture he could really use. And he developed it, and he finds it quite good. So we usually, like classically, you say sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. So you might want to try that. Now, at the end of the day, after, like yesterday, my knees are pretty sore, my hips are sore, I'm kind of out of shape. And so we're all kind of out of shape, you know, if you haven't done this much meditation. So realize it's especially if you're getting on in years, it's not so easy. So do as much as you can. But then, like, just laying down last night, oh, so pleasant. And then just thought, oh, this is what pleasant feels like. You just keep coming back to that. It's just, this is pleasant. Pleasant. Or just, you know, like sometimes Buddhists can be a bit kind of wet blanket. You know, we can say, you know, you experience something pleasant, oh, you're attached. Or you say, it will change. Thanks. So, like, just the pleasantness of food. You know, tasting something, this is pleasant. Rather than taking a position for or against, pleasant feels this way. So the more you're aware of pleasant, then when unpleasant comes, your awareness is there and you see, ah, preference. I prefer the pleasant to the unpleasant. Not that you shouldn't prefer, but you can see how preference works. It works this way. And so the liberating quality of consciousness is awareness of change, rather than the desire to change. That doesn't really liberate you, it keeps you kind of busy. Not that you can't change things, not that you can't kind of have an apple rather than a plum, I mean, that's allowed. But to realize that apples are not liberating, plums are not liberating. So the sense of awakening to all things and staying larger than them, that's a kind of a good image, I think. Staying larger than the particular condition, bigger than the fear, bigger than the like or the dislike. So, continuing with ideas around just the sitting practice and so on. So, like this morning and yesterday, I talked about the heart practice. So, again, I'd really encourage you to become adept at that. I think it's a major part of the Buddha's teaching, to understand how to recollect compassion, how to recollect kindness. So as I was saying, for those of you who weren't here, this morning we were doing a practice of welcoming in an image of someone we like into the heart with the breath, and then letting go with the heart, wishing them well. So I was wishing Supong well. I hope he felt my vibes. But it really, you know, as I was saying, it's just a simple thing. Yeah. I know him for many years. He supported me, fed me, his family's fed me. And I, you know, it's very easy just to think of him and be grateful. But now then I use that very natural connection, and then I imagine him, Supong, and bring him into the heart. May you be well. Soul, come to the heart, may you be well. And so these are beautiful things of consciousness, and they're natural, you know, they're not unnatural, they're there all the time. And so what we're doing is we're enhancing them. Then that becomes a foundation for awareness, you know, that awareness can join with compassion, then can include a lot, it can include a lot. So in mindfulness of breathing, which is one of the great practices that the Buddha suggested, what I found useful is to first of all kind of really get into the body before I try to refine my attention. Because we live in thought so much, we're oftentimes not aware of our bodies. We're not really with the body, kind of caught in the thought realm. So to kind of come into the body takes time. You know, it's like you're not used to being in the body. You're kind of used to be more in the thought realms. So what I was suggesting yesterday, do some kind of deep breathing first, some kind of vigorous breathing. Play around with the breath. Play around with the posture. So it's quite a kind of obvious thing you're doing. And then I think for most people what happens is you get a kind of refinement after that. It seems very coarse to have to do deep breathing, or it seems very coarse to have to do that. But if you don't do something initially to feel the body and feel the object of meditation, then sometimes your mind just drifts. So you begin by setting up the posture, making the intention. You make the intention, you're going to meditate. It seems very obvious, but that's what you do. Then I think to open the heart, you get a kind of pattern going, and then you begin to work with the breath in a more refined way. So I'll just go through that kind of a pattern now, and practice with that, okay? Again, this pattern of establishing awareness by listening. So if you listen, let the sounds come to you, receptive. And try to move away from thought. So begin to sense no thought, just listening. And this, these suggestions of non-becoming, not going anywhere with this, just being. Non-aversion, acceptance. Non-delusion, you know what's going on. Presence. And then use that as the standard of awakening, listening, receptive. And bring in the intention of compassion and kindness. So breathing in, may I be well. Breathing out, may I be free. Breathing in at the center of the chest, may I be well. Breathing out, may I be free. So you create the intention of kindness. So you use two phrases, which then occupies the thinking mind. You use the breath, which calms the mind. Now, just to remind you of that more deep breathing exercise, which you can use for drowsiness, I'll just go through that again. So begin to expand your breath, deepen it and lengthen it. So long breath in, long breath out. Feel a long breath, feel the whole long out breath. Just this, if you start thinking about something else, your breath will become shallow. So try to sustain this now. Long breath in, long breath out. Long breath in, long breath out. Now on the out breath, we stretch upwards, the upper spine through the neck, top of the head. So long breath in, long breath out, stretch upwards. A nice yoga stretch. Feel the top of your head being pulled to the ceiling. Long breath in, long breath out, stretch upwards. This opens the chest. Stretches the spine, stretches the back of the neck. Long breath in, long breath out, stretch upwards. Long breath in, long breath out. Now downwards, the lower half of the back, pushing down into the floor. Base of the spine pushing into the floor on the out breath. Long breath in, long breath out, pushing down. When you push down, then you feel your belly moving out, the hara opening up. Long breath in, long breath out. And then stretching both ways, long breath in. Long breath out, stretching up and down. Feel the stretch. Open the chest, raise the top of the head, push down to the floor, really stretch it out. Long breath in, long breath out. Stretching both ways. Long breath in, long breath out. Stay with a long breath. Now just let your posture become normal. Let go of the stretch. Now find a nice tall posture. Nice and open. Open at the chest and belly. Stay with a long breath. Long breath in, long breath out. So use this way of breathing if you get sleepy. So now let your breath become normal, or find a rhythm and depth of breathing where we can be aware of it. Don't let it become too subtle, just especially in the beginning. So you're really with the whole in-breath, with the whole out-breath. So you settle with something comfortable. Now you could do that deep breathing for 20 minutes if you wanted, if you really want to energize. That's just an example. So now a good comfortable breath. So where is it in the body? How does it feel? Now pay a lot of attention to the end of the out-breath. So the end of the out-breath, you let go, you're right with it, awake to it. And then when the breath comes in, don't clench your hands, don't clench your eyes. Keep the body really open. So if the breath becomes subtle, let it become subtle. But if you start to just be kind of lost in thought or whatever, then deepen the breath. Make it more obvious. Play around with it. So the basic thing is to stay attentive or awake in that receptive listening way for one in-breath, one out-breath, and see how long we can sustain that. So it's a training in being present, knowing the way things are. See if you can establish that listening quality of consciousness at the end of the out-breath. See if you can bring your awareness to no thought at the end of the out-breath. So you feel the end of the out-breath, no thought. So that listening kind of consciousness is very clear there. And then let the next in-breath come in by itself. So you'll find your thinking processes get interrupted. Someone coughs, I say something, your knee hurts. So there's a point there where thinking gets interrupted. And that's the point of awakening. And in that moment, it's really important to bring a sense of, not quite gladness, but goodness into the mind, that this is it, I'm home again. Rather than analyze why you're thinking or regret that you're thinking. So you notice the end of thought, that moment when thought is interrupted by something, that's the end of thought. So you notice the space after thought. And that's a silent noticing, not an analytical thinking. So then awaken the mind there, that moment, really come back to listening, establish that clarity, listening, presence, keep coming back to that, and then pick up the meditation object from clarity, and then try to sustain that clarity of presence for one in-breath, one out-breath. So it's just these little pieces in the cycle. Okay, I kind of compare it to riding a bicycle. Balance is when there's the awakened mind. And then you ride the out-breath, awaken right to the end of the out-breath. And then you notice the change. And then if you're meditating, your eyes are getting tense, your forehead's getting tense, that means you're trying too hard, and step back. Make the awareness bigger, broader. And then if you're just getting cloudy and sleepy, use the spine. Energize the spine with a deep breathing.